Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy welcomes producer and journalist Cyrus Farivar to discuss his new book, Habeas Data, Privacy versus the Rise of Surveillance Tech, an insightful look at the implications for the future of privacy. Tuesday, June 12th at 7 p.m. at the Ivy Bookshop. More at theivybookshop.com or call 410-377-2966.
Hello from the Baltimore Sun, I'm Dan Rodericks. This is Roughly Speaking, episode 393 for Friday, May 25th, 2018. Well, here we go again. It's another Star Wars movie opening today in theaters across the galaxy. This one is called Solo, and it's another prequel or origination story telling the backstory of Han Solo, where he came from, how he obtained the Millennium Falcon, how he and Chewie became science fiction's most famous buddy team. Yes, here we go again. 41 years back, when Star Wars first exploded onto movie screens and we were all enthralled, I never thought I'd feel exhaustion at what we were told would be an old-fashioned movie serial. But when they asked us to accept that the first three Star Wars movies were actually episodes 4, 5, and 6, then released episodes 1, 2, and 3, before waiting 10 years to release episodes 7 and 8, when Jar Jar Binks showed up in The Phantom Menace, that's when I got off the mothership and watched the Lucasfilm franchise from a distance. But that's me. Linda DeLibero and Christopher Llewellyn Reed are the professional movie watchers here and our film critics. And that duo is here to talk Solo and to tell us what to expect if, pulled in by a tractor beam, we end up at the cinema this holiday weekend. Also, the release of Solo gives us an opportunity to talk about the whole universe of characters and conflicts created by George Lucas over the last four decades. And we'll do it all in about 25 podcasty minutes. We'll get to our Star Wars Han Solo retrospective right after the weekly book recommendation from Paula Gallagher. This week, a novel called Love and Ruin by Paula MacLean.
Paula MacLean got critical acclaim for her first book, The Paris Wife, which was a look at the marriage of Ernest Hemingway and his first wife, Hadley Richardson. She's back with another look at Hemingway. This time it's the relationship with his third wife, Martha Gellhorn. And as the book begins, she's a fascinating young woman in her late 20s, and she is in Key West with her family. She's out with her mother, and they stop in a bar, and of course, who is sitting there but Ernest Hemingway? And after a little banter, clearly he's smitten with her. She is taken with him. His career has already begun. She knows who he is. He claims to know who she is. He says he's read her novel. So she's already a published novelist. But as the book progresses, she's on her way to becoming a serious journalist and a known war correspondent in her own right. And so this follows that relationship from that meeting when he is already married to his second wife, Pauline. As the book progresses, they're drawn to each other. There's a lot of traveling. They end up together, despite the fact that she is 10 years his junior. This is the alcoholic Hemingway, the messy, carousing, populist Hemingway. But through all this, he seems to be very dedicated to her. He separates from his second wife. He still, though, is never able to tame that wandering nature that he has. She, however, is a strong foil. She doesn't sit there pining over him. She's driven to follow her own career, which makes this an interesting story and therefore an interesting book. Hemingway begins to resent her career, and there's even a time where they're almost competing at the time as war correspondents. As you're reading this book, one of the things I liked about it is finding out history that I didn't know a lot about. I think she does a good job with the material. It drove me to go and do some more research about Hemingway and Gellhorn and her career. But it's interesting to read it as a novel and to just experience that relationship. I thought it was very enjoyable, a good escapist book, and one I recommend for people who enjoy literary historical fiction. Again, the title is Love and Ruin by Paula MacLean.
Paula Gallagher is a librarian in the Baltimore County system. She recommends a book a week on Roughly Speaking.
Hi, Hi, I'm Quinn Kelly, and I host a weekly podcast for the Baltimore Sun called Female Trouble. Each Tuesday, we feature a new long-form conversation with one of the area's most interesting and accomplished women, from public officials and congresswomen to rappers and restaurant owners. You can find Female Trouble on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Find more info at baltimoresun.com/femaletrouble.
And on this week's Female Trouble, Quinn Kelly brings you some of the speakers who were featured on a panel and recorded live at the Women of the World Festival at Notre Dame of Maryland University. Check it out. Now to Solo, A Star Wars Story, directed by Ron Howard from a screenplay by Jonathan Kasdan and Lawrence Kasdan, starring a young actor whose name I didn't know but saw and liked in a Coen Brothers movie, playing a young Han Solo, and Donald Glover, who I just saw as Childish Gambino in his provocative This Is America music video, playing a young Lando Kardashian. I'm sorry, Calrissian. So it sounds promising, but let's hear what our critics think. Linda and Chris, welcome back to a galaxy far, far away. Nice to see you both.
Great to see you.
Great to be here, Dan.
So quickly, let's just jump on Solo to hear what you have to say about that, and then we'll talk about Han through the years. So what about this movie?
Well, I am not a Star Wars person. And
I know this, Linda. I appreciate you coming in to do the show anyway.
Right. Well, it's very interesting. I mean, it's ubiquitous, right? Has been forever. And I read A.O. Scott's review of the movie.
In the Times.
Yeah, and he refers to himself as, I think, a C-minus Star Wars person.
Student.
Student of Star Wars. Well, I'm barely passing.
I'm about a B-minus. I'm a B-minus, I would say.
Really bad. Yeah. But nevertheless, so I didn't have as much at stake whether this new Han Solo was going to mimic Harrison Ford or be as appealing, blah, blah, blah. And so I thought that he was perfectly fine in this film.
What is this actor's name, by the way?
Alden Ehrenreich.
Thank you. And I saw him in Hail Caesar.
That is correct.
Where he played a young cowboy character.
Yep.
Where he was terrific in Hail Caesar.
He was terrific in Hail Caesar.
He was amazing.
And he might have been the highlight of Hail Caesar.
And I'll go back to Linda in a moment, but the title of my review at Film Festival today of this movie is It Delivers Serviceable Goods. So it's an enjoyable film. I call myself a B-plus student of Star Wars, but I used to be, when I was 11 and 12, an A-plus student, and then I just, over the years, maybe I'm only a B, B-minus, maybe I'm being too generous. Great inflation.
Well, you heard me speak of exhaustion.
Yes.
Or maybe just being a little worn out by this massive franchise that's
been
around.
See, yeah, and see, I'm not worn out because I never cared about it in the first place, so going to see this movie was actually kind of fun for me. Because I long ago got over my anger at this franchise, which has single-handedly ruined film entirely. So I'm over that, okay?
Did you hear what she just said? Single-handedly ruined film.
I think it shares the blame.
And by the way, Ms. DeLibero is from Johns Hopkins University, which on this very day that we're recording this podcast conferred an honorary degree on George Lucas at the Baltimore Arena.
Who's now going to back in after hearing this podcast. I would say that George Lucas shares the blame with his close friend Steven Spielberg and I like the films of Spielberg, but they delivered a 1-2 punch to the American new wave of cinema with 1975's Jaws and 1977 Star Wars in terms of turning B movies, what used to be considered B pictures, into A pictures in terms of budget.
Blockbusters.
It's basically they single-handedly, or rather together, invented the modern blockbuster era.
So that's what you mean, especially in the 70s, right? Because things were rolling along pretty nicely there in the early to mid-70s,
yes,
right?
Yes, it was the golden age of New Hollywood and the era of the auteur. And it's really interesting because, of course, Lucas was an auteur, and he had created this really kind of remarkable movie in his student days, THX 1138, which is a very dystopian vision of the future and very political. And he creates Star Wars almost, it's kind of a reaction to the unpopularity of this very 70s auteur film that he made. Hmm. So he goes to this formula. You know, he grew up loving this old serials and loving film altogether. You can see a lot of John Ford and Kurosawa and those, you know, the old movie serials from the 30s, 40s, and 50s. It has a very conservative cast to it in the sense that these movies, the first three at least, are very much about looking back to some golden age when everything was much, much better. And it ends this era of filmmaking that is characterized by a very careful and close examination of American culture and politics and very pessimistic films. This was an era that lasted maybe 10 years. But if you were living through it, you thought that movies were always going to be that way mm-hmm. going forward. And then all of a sudden, everybody kind of got sick of that pessimism and cynicism. And so this was the right time for these films.
And it was kind of a revival of the Western, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
In some ways, it's a space Western in many ways.
Would you say that's true of the current film, the Solo?
Yes, I would.
I would, but it doesn't have quite the energy of the original film, which, like it or not, at the time, had a sort of freshness to it, even though it was killing the American New Wave. I just want to piggyback on what Linda was saying. So Lucas makes THX 1138, one of my favorite films of the 70s, in 1971. Hmm. It tanks, and he's very depressed.
Where does American Graffiti fit in?
So this is what happens. So he says, fine, you don't like my movie? And so he goes and he studies the writings of Joseph Campbell and the myth of the hero, and he comes back with American Graffiti, in 1973, which is already looking back nostalgically to his own childhood, the late 50s, early 60s in California.
Can I throw a PS in?
Yeah.
Harrison Ford and Ron Howard
are both
in that film. American Graffiti. Ron Howard ended up directing Solo. Okay,
indeed. Sorry. So then American Graffiti is a smashing success, and that success is what allows him to start playing with the technology that would allow the amazing, for the time, special effects of 1977. He suddenly had money, and he was convinced that his role was now to continue with, as Linda was saying, with a sort of nostalgia, looking back to the films of his childhood, you know, and from there there's no looking back. And he gave up his ambitions of a young man, because really, THX 1138 is, I agree, a fascinating film and far different from what he produced
later. I'm glad you both mentioned that. And that's an interesting history with Lucas.
Very interesting.
On this film focuses on Han Solo, origination story. If you were interested where Han Solo came from, this is all in there, right? Is it fun? Is this a fun movie?
It is. When I say it delivers serviceable goods, I don't mean that it's not enjoyable. I had a good time watching it. I wish that Alden Ehrenreich were cockier. I missed that cocksureness that we see in the, at the time, young Harrison Ford.
Look, your worshipfulness, let's get one thing straight. I take orders from just one person, me.
And as soon as Donald Glover appeared on the screen as Lando Calrissian, I was like, yes, that is what I wanted to see more of in Alden Ehrenreich. But he's fine, right? And the film does the job. This is, I should note, the second sort of non-chronological Star Wars story.
The other one was Rogue One. Rogue One.
And they're going to probably have more prequels, more side stories.
Whenever you have a franchise like this, something that just grows and grows over time, how does the producer, how does Hollywood, the company that owns the rights, how do they resist doing these things? Because there's so much money to be made. There seems to be a yearning for more storylines.
Well, since Lucas sold his company to Disney, right? I don't think Disney has any qualms about making millions of these kinds of franchise box office killers. And, you know, one thing I thought was very interesting about this film, going back to the idea of the auteur theory. The two guys who made the Lego movie, Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, were directing this film, and they were basically fired because they weren't conforming to the Disney / Lucas model. What I suspect, and what a lot of people suspect, is that they were trying to make it a lot snappier and a little crazier, you know, the way the Lego movie, a little more irreverent, which I think would have been great, but it's not a Star Wars film then.
Right.
But the producers, Kathleen Kennedy in particular, took them off the picture, replaced them with Ron Howard, who's an old friend of Lucas's and a longtime Hollywood staple. And I think everybody really took pause in Hollywood at this because it really signified that the producer in Hollywood now is king. You no longer have these directors who have enormous power. You have producers who oversee these franchises and can pretty much brand them and manipulate them in any way.
You know, you think of Ron Howard as being sort of an independent director in his own right, right? He's kind of a reliable Hollywood director. Mm-hmm. You can count on him to pull off what's been prescribed.
And this is in no way a Ron Howard
film.
You
right.
don't look at it and say, yes, yeah. I recognize
right.
the
he's,
hand.
He's a traffic cop doing what, you know, he's supposed to do. It's very interesting what you said, Linda, about the producer being king, because part of what bothers me with all of these series is what I call the mega serialization of cinematic narrative these days. So, you know, everything is a series. It's true that in the world of television or home viewing today, the writer, producer, or showrunner is definitely king or queen. And we're starting to see basically that these two universes of moving image storytelling are running in parallel. One has much bigger budgets, but they're both about these series that must be protected. They must be branded. This is how things are done. And, you know, it is the triumph of the writer, producer, or at least the producer in the television world. It's usually the writer, producer, the showrunner.
Since this film is called Solo, about Han Solo, I thought it would be fun. I didn't think. Actually, it was Chris's idea and Linda's to talk about Han through the ages.
Don't point your finger at me.
The first time we heard from Han was in the original Star Wars film, and he's a gritty, hard-bitten sort of. You don't know if he's a criminal or if he's just a mercenary guy. What's his deal? And it was very interesting to see the character develop. And then they become sort of the senior, sort of avuncular Han Solo in the later movies.
Yeah,
it's
I agree.
Weird.
It's weird. Isn't
it's very strange to see these actors come back. And, of course, The Last Jedi is the most uncanny of them all because mm-hmm. of Carrie Fisher. And I think that speaks of this franchise's enormous power and ubiquity and its incredible influence, not just on film, but on our culture altogether, that you look at these people that you've basically lived with for, 40 years? And there they are, and you're watching them basically lose their immortality.
Yeah.
It's really, really strange.
That is strange. So we have one clip from the new film, Solo, and this is Han meeting Lando.
That is correct. So when the film begins, Han is but a young man trying to make his way in the world. He doesn't have a ship, the Millennium Falcon, yet. And those of us who at one point may have paid attention to details in previous films know that Lando Calrissian was the original owner of the Millennium Falcon. And so here he is showing up on some planet, the name of which I have already forgotten, to meet Lando Calrissian. Lando is played by the great Donald Glover, and Han Solo is played by Alden Ehrenreich, and they are sitting down to a game of some science fiction poker-like thing.
Captain Lando Calrissian.
Han Solo.
Looks like you're having a good day.
I'm a lucky guy.
Can I ask you a question, Captain Calrissian?
Anything, Han.
It's Han, but that's okay. I heard a story about you. I was wondering if it's true.
Everything you've heard about me, it's true.
Does he lose the Millennium Falcon in the game?
No, this is just the start of their bet. They're basically just introducing themselves.
All right. So now a little retrospective on Star Wars and Han Solo in particular.
Indeed. So we've got Harrison Ford's Han Solo in the original 1977 Star Wars, trading banter with his other castmates, including Carrie Fisher, who is a princess in need of rescuing.
Just avoid any more female advice. We ought to be able to get out of here.
Well, let's get moving.
Where are you going?
No, wait till here!
Come here, you big coward. Chewie, come here.
Listen, I don't know who you are or where you came from, but from now on, you do as I tell you, okay?
Look, Your Worshipfulness, let's get one thing straight. I take orders from just one person, me.
So one day he's still alive. Will somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way?
No reward is worth this.
Okay, and in the next clip, we hear some of Carrie Fisher's sarcasm. It's throughout the movie.
Indeed, she delivers what could only be called an extraordinarily sarcastic performance, but she's matched ironic wit for ironic wit by Harrison Ford.
Not a bad bit of rescuing, huh? You know, sometimes I amaze even myself.
That doesn't sound too hard. They let us go. It's the only explanation for the ease of our escape.
Easy? You call that easy?
They're tracking us.
Not this ship, sister.
At least the information in R2 is still intact.
What's so important? What's he carrying?
The technical readouts of that battle station.
I only hope that when the data's analyzed, a weakness can be found. It's not over yet.
It is for me, sister. Look, I ain't in this for your revolution, and I'm not in it for you, princess. I expect to be well paid. I'm in it for the money.
You needn't worry about your reward. If money is all that you love, then that's what you'll receive.
Your friend is quite a mercenary. I wonder if he really cares about anything or anybody.
Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford.
Yes, and this is the big difference between the new Han Solo, or rather the original Han Solo. It's so crazy. And the one that is so beloved by fans, this young Han Solo in the new movie already has a love, and he's madly in love with this girl and very romantic. It's really difficult for me to conceive of how this new Han Solo gets to be that Harrison Ford character in the beginning of this franchise, because one of the really wonderful things about these movies is the screwball comedy that Lucas kind of throws into the middle of this with these two, they hate each other until they love each other characters. And the joke is that Han Solo, of course, is so uninterested in her, and he's always making fun of her and teasing her and bringing her down to his level, so to speak. And in the new movie, he basically spends most of the time kind of mooning over his lost love.
So he's so romantic, it's hard for you to see where this transition took place, where he becomes this hard-bitten, aloof guy who's with Leia.
Try to play it in later episodes that, you know, he's gotten his heart broken and now he's cynical, but I don't know.
They do hint at that at the end of this film. And I should point out that this woman, this love interest, is played by the magnificent Emilia Clarke, who many will know from Game of Thrones, as the most popular character. Daenerys Targaryen, I think is how we pronounce her name. And I think she's actually one of the most interesting characters in this film. But yes, I agree with you. It does give a different version of Han.
Now, here's another challenge to Han Solo from Mark Hamill, who's playing Luke Skywalker, who thinks he should stick around and help out
the Resistance.
The Resistance. Thank you.
This is right at the end of the first Star Wars film, now called Episode 4, A New Hope, where Han has gotten his money from the Resistance for returning Leia to them and is now taking off. And Luke, played by Mark Hamill, is saying, come back, stay. And, of course, as we all know, he does show up in the final moments and help Luke destroy the Death Star. But in this moment, he's getting ready to go.
So, you got your reward and you're just leaving then?
That's right, yeah. Got some old debts I got to pay off with this stuff. Even if I didn't, you don't think I'd be fool enough to stick around here, do you? Why don't you come with us? Pretty good in a fight. Could use you.
Come on. Why don't you take a look around? You know what's about to happen, what they're up against. They could use a good pilot like you. You're turning your back on them.
What good's a reward if you ain't around to use it? Besides, attacking that battle station ain't my idea of courage. It's more like suicide.
Well, take care of yourself, Han. But I guess that's what you're best at, isn't it?
Hey, Luke. May the Force be with you.
Now, things are heating up between Princess Leia and Han Solo, right? All through the movie. You're expecting at some point it's going to happen.
Indeed, and it sort of flourishes in the next film, Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, wait a minute. Did we just jump to The Empire Strikes Back?
We did. This is the next film.
Where she says, I'd rather kiss a Wookiee?
That's the start of Empire Strikes Back.
That's right. That's where the Wookiees show up.
Well, no, the Wookiees in the first one, but
the Wookiees are in the first one?
Well, there's just one Wookiee. We actually get multiple Wookiees in this new film, Solo, a Star Wars movie.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. But this is a famous line we wanted to hear.
Where they're arguing, and she says to him, I'd rather kiss a Wookiee, and then he says, well, we'll hear that in a moment.
Well, Your Highness, guess this is it.
That's right.
Don't get all mushy on me. So long, Princess.
Han, we need you.
We need?
Yes.
Well, what about you need?
I need. I don't know what you're talking about.
Probably don't.
And what precisely am I supposed to know?
Come on. You want me to stay because of the way you feel about me?
Yes. You're a great help to us. You're a natural leader.
No. That's not it. Come on. Come on.
You're imagining things.
Am I? Then why are you following me? Fredo's gonna leave without giving you a goodbye kiss?
I just assumed he's a Wookiee.
I can arrange that.
You gotta appreciate Chris, because he does keep us straight on all this stuff.
Right? I know. You know? And it's very interesting. I hadn't seen these the latest two films.
The Force Awakens, Force Awakens and The Last Jedi.
The Last Jedi. I just can't keep any of this straight. And a friend of mine and I watched Force Awakens, and after it was over, we immediately went to our computers and started looking up the lineage, trying to figure out who was related to who and what was going to happen. It's just amazing. You suddenly become involved in this fantastic web of connections and stories. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were both laughing because neither one of us care that much. But all of a sudden, we were deeply involved in the lineage and the chronology and the whole Star Wars universe.
It does sap the brain.
Yes, it does.
Thank God for Wikipedia.
It does. And I think, you know, some people really love being part of fandom of anything, right?
Yeah.
And other people, you know, want to move on after they watch a single film. And, you know, I certainly like some series, but I don't particularly enjoy spending all my days considering who's related to whom. What really gets me in the Lucasverse are just all of the planet names. And all of the new creatures who pop up every time. I'm just not that interested in that stuff.
Okay. Because I was going to ask you, with Solo, what's the setting of Solo? Are they on Tatooine? Is it Tatooine?
If they land on Tatooine, I missed it. Yeah. I don't believe they are.
It's like they're on some...
They are on a desert planet at the
but
end.
But it's
quite
it
possibly
something
are.
With the sea. Yeah.
And there's a villain, this weird creature, again, with the creatures, who pops up in that opening scene. And she has a name, and I couldn't remember to save my life.
I'm sorry. We have another clip for you. Oh, this is Billy Dee Williams.
Indeed. And he's
who used to do Colt 45 malt liquor commercials. And I was thinking, is that the future of Donald Glover?
God, let's hope not. But you know, Billy Dee Williams brings a nice suavité.
I must say, though, do you remember in 1977 seeing him?
He's
I know you
great.
Don't.
Oh, I do.
You remember?
I do. I watched a lot of TV in the 70s.
But he's so suave and sexy.
Yeah, but he shows up in the Star Wars movie. Weren't you a little surprised to see him as Lando?
A little.
Okay.
But now in retrospect, it seems perfectly natural.
Yeah.
And he plays that same sort of role that Donald Glover plays. He shows up and you're like, oh, thank God. Mm-hmm. Somebody's interesting here.
Right.
And they carry on very nicely with that character with the cape. The current Lando, we get to see his cape closet, which is full of beautiful capes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They have a lot of fun with Lando's narcissism.
Oh, yeah?
In the new film.
Oh,
yeah.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun.
But here's the meeting of Luke Skywalker with Lando for the first time, right?
Luke,
because
Han
knows him.
Yeah, Luke, Han, Leia, and Lando all meeting in this cloud city on another planet.
What was the name of the city?
I can't remember them.
That's okay.
Yeah, yeah. So my grade is now going down. I've gone to a B minus for a B, C plus.
Just make
but yes,
something
they're meeting for the first time in that particular movie, Empire Strikes Back, Episode 5.
Hello, what have we here?
Welcome, I'm Lando Calrissian. I'm the administrator of this facility. And who might you be?
Leia.
Welcome, Leia.
You old smoothie.
Hello, sir. I am C-3PO Human Cyborg Relations. My facilities are at your... Well, really.
What's wrong with the Falcon?
Hyperdrive.
I'll get my people to work on it.
Good.
You know, that ship saved my life quite a few times. She's the fastest hunk of junk in the galaxy.
So, people are lined up outside the Senator Theater. This is some years ago when they showed this film for the second time, you know, in revival. A horde of people outside the Senator waiting to get in, and a Baltimore City police cruiser goes by, and they have a speaker on the outside of the car where they can address somebody.
So some cop is inside the car and he's going, Luke, I am your father. Luke, I am your father. Everybody cracked up. It was a great scene. Anyway, so this is an iconic moment, just a huge moment in this series.
And indeed, and even though it exists outside of the Han narrative, which we're focusing on here, it is such an iconic moment. Plus, in The Force Awakens, Episode 7, we have a sort of a different echo of this moment between father and son. So this sort of intergenerational conflict is really at the heart of this series. So we have James Earl Jones with plenty of amplification to make him sound like his voice is coming out of Darth Vader's mask, and Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker, at this point, minus a hand.
There is no escape. Don't make me destroy you. Luke, you do not yet realize your importance. You have only begun to discover your power. Join me, and I will complete your training. With our combined strength, we can end this destructive conflict and bring order to the galaxy.
I'll never join you!
If you only knew the power of the dark side, Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your father.
He told me enough! He told me you killed him.
No. I am your father.
No. No. That's not true. That's impossible!
And now we go to The Force Awakens, where we have Minnie Driver's brother. What's his name?
Adam Driver.
Adam, with Harrison Ford.
That's right. So he's the villain. Adam Driver's Kylo Ren, birth name Ben, I think.
Yes, Ben. Ben Solo.
Ben Solo. The child.
I got that.
There we go. We got some names. The child of Princess Leia and Han Solo has been recruited to the dark side by the First Order, which is the new empire. And
where are they based, you know?
Some planet. you just want to see how many names I can't get. And so in this scene, there's a confrontation between father and son that doesn't go so well for the father, though this clip doesn't go quite to that tragic moment.
Take off that mask. You don't need it.
What do you think you'll see if I do?
The face of my son.
Your son, he's gone. He was weak and foolish, like his father. So I destroyed him.
That's what Snoke wants you to believe. But it's not true. My son is alive.
No. The Supreme Leader is wise.
Snoke is using you for your power. When he gets what he wants, he'll crush you. You know it's true.
It's too late.
No, it's not. Leave here with me. Come home. We miss you.
I had trouble with Rogue One. I was kind of bored, to tell you the truth. This sounds more promising.
Yes, I was not a huge fan of Rogue One. I actually did have a good time during this one, whatever my quibbles about the performance of Alden Ehrenreich and some other things. It's a pretty, you know, enjoyable swashbuckler.
Okay.
It's fun. But, you know,
it's time to move on, isn't it?
Well, that's what Disney thinks it's doing. They're moving on. They want to get rid of the Lucas influence, I believe, which George Lucas has reacted to most unkindly. There was a famous interview he did not long after he sold his babies, as he called them, or his children, with the now disgraced Charlie Rose, where Charlie Rose actually got him to say how much regret he had over it. And he was angry with Disney, called them, he had sold his children to white slavers, which he had to roll back very quickly. But it was a very revealing moment. And I think what's interesting about the last two, The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, is that there is this sense that, first of all, what we were nostalgic for when we saw the first three movies, which was a time when everything was right, now we're just nostalgic for those first three movies.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a completely enclosed universe that I think You know, they really want to get past that and put their own imprint on these films. And I think what's going to happen, possibly, maybe, is that they're kind of going to ruin what they have.
There's one more film, right?
There is Episode 9 slated to come out, I think, next year, and that'll be directed by J.J. Abrams, who also did The Force Awakens.
Right, okay. And believe me, there'll be more. I'm quite certain.
We'll get the young Leia. We'll get the young Chewbacca.
Yeah.
You know, just the other night I saw a trailer on TV for another Jurassic movie, Jurassic World.
Yeah, it's coming out in this June.
Yeah. You seem excited about it.
I'm not particularly. I didn't like the last one very much.
That was terrible.
How many would that make? Is that four or five?
That would be the fifth.
Wow.
But, you know, it doesn't matter. They still make money off these things, these behemoths. But to me, that's an interesting question. Are they going to dilute the original brand to the point where it really isn't Star Wars anymore, which seems to me to be the way they're headed? I think there's a kind of resentment, not just from Lucas, but from the Disney people. Like, you sold this thing for $4 billion. Now it's ours, and we're going to do whatever we want with it. And I just wonder how diehard fans will react to where they take this franchise.
A subject for another show, a lot more original, imaginative programming that's streaming from Netflix and Amazon, in my opinion.
Oh, so God, yes.
We could talk about that next time that Chris and Linda are here. Thank you both.
Thanks, Dan.
Linda DeLibero is Director of Film and Media Studies at Johns Hopkins University. Christopher Llewellyn Reed is Chair and Professor in the Department of Film and Moving Image at Stevenson University. They join us once a month to discuss the cinema, current and classic. That's our show for now. Thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking. For producer Quinn Kelly, I'm Dan Rodericks. Have a good weekend. We'll see you again soon. And of course, may the Force be with you.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by The Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. Located at 6080 Falls Road, more information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.